Welcome to This Is Money. I'm Georgie Frost, and alongside me and editor Simon Lambert today is assistant editor Lee Boyce. And we have an election coming up, and we did promise that when we had the manifestos that we would cover them, and we are still waiting on the Tories, but that doesn't mean that we can't give you a quick update on the Lib Dems and Labour. So we will do that today. Also, the health of Britain's rental sector is in decline. Inheritance tax rebates are up, fears of a winter NHS crisis related to pensions, and what is the registration plate lotto? All that and plenty more. Don't forget, you stay up to date with all the latest breaking money news. Just go to thisismoney.co.uk or download the app. But first, Simon did assure you last week, as much as we may wish to, that we haven't forgotten about the upcoming election. We have been waiting for something to actually get our teeth into and to chat about, i.e. the manifestos. We're still waiting, as I mentioned just then, on the Conservative Party, but we did get the offerings of the Lib Dems and Labour this week. So when we have the full set, I'm right in thinking, Simon, we will deliver that properly, a proper rundown, but just a quick teaser, if you would, the standouts of what we've heard so far. Money, money, money. We're going to get loads of money. Everything's going to be paid for us 4-day weeks. The NHS is going to be flush, right? Should we start with Labour?
Yes, all indeed. Right. The people accused this week by the Prime Minister, Boris Johnson, of having a magic money forest, not just a magic money tree. Although it should be noted that Mr. Johnson is making some pretty bold promises about the number of people that he's going to put in the NHS. So he thinks that he has a magic GP tree, it seems. Yeah. But yes, Labour's was launched today to much fanfare. For the many, not for you, as I quipped, because there was a tweet linking to it at which everybody tried to click on the link and you couldn't get in, and it said access denied.
I thought you were specifically blocked. I thought the Labour Party had blocked you on Twitter. I thought, that is something, Simon.
Because I'm a stooge of the billionaire-owned media. I'm not sure that cunning these people working for the political parties are, that they're actually that clever that they've managed to block certain people from accessing their manifestos. This was just a good old-fashioned lots of people clicking the link at the same time kind of crash. Anyway, we finally got in there. I guess the eye catcher is the new super rich rate of income tax, which was actually labelled as the super rich rate of income tax. And just for anybody who's doubting me and can't see what I'm doing, I'm holding it up in front of Georgie now.
You
this
are.
Is from the man from the funding document. What does that call it?
What? An inheritance tax. Oh no, super rich rate payable.
Yeah, that's from £125,000.
You just held up an email with a lot of writing on there. And he's like, well, what does it say? I don't know. Do you want me to read the whole thing?
Right, yes, okay. It's lucky this isn't filmed, isn't it, people? Right. So, anyway, we have that from £125,000. We also have a new additional rate of income tax from £80,000. They didn't actually divulge the rates, unfortunately, in any of the three documents that they put out, but we can reasonably assume that they are 45p from 80,000 and 50p from 125,000. These are going to be fairly controversial. I don't think that people earning lots of money particularly have a huge problem with paying a little bit more tax if they think it's going into something that's worthwhile. I don't think, though, that most people think of the super rich as the people earning £125,000 a year plus. I mean, if you're earning £125,000 a year, you are quids in. Mm. Make no doubt of that. You are on, more than four times the average wage. Okay, but you're not super rich. The super rich that we talk about when we mean the super rich are the people, the executive, FTSE executive class, the people being bosses being paid millions of pounds a year, the people who may be in the fund management industry, the city lawyers, the people who are being paid £500,000 a year, the footballers we hear about and so on. And then you start to move into the realms of the billionaires. Those are the super rich, aren't they?
Yeah.
They're not the £125,000 bracket. So I don't know whether they've done themselves any favours here. Quick rundown through some of the others. Reverse George Osborne's inheritance tax cut. That's his own home allowance that takes the amount a couple can leave tax-free up to £1 million. That'll be dragged back. No other news on inheritance tax, so doesn't seem to be this lifetime gift allowance that had been flagged in some sort of think tanky documents. capital gains tax, that's a big one. Capital gains is going to be taxed at the same rates as income tax. That could see the tax on investment gains that you make from selling shares, if they're not inside an ISA, rise from 20%, 10% or 20%, to a potential 20%, 45%, or 50% level. And the capital gains tax allowance would be completely removed. Dividends be taxed at the same rate as well. Dividend allowance would be removed. There's plans for a second home tax, which would be 200% of council tax. Corporation tax is going to go up to 26%. Double paid paternity leave and increased paternity pay to a full week at the minimum wage, and extending statutory maternity pay to 12 months, and lots of other stuff. It's been dubbed a tax and spend manifesto.
Yes, there's lots in there. And before anyone complains, as I will repeat again, we will go in much more detail when we have all three manifestos to run through. But Lee, shall I hand over the Lib Dems to you?
You can do, Georgie. I can say I was very excited to receive my polling card through the post. It's a lovely Christmas gift to come through.
Why
got
you?
Me excited for the election. What do you think? Another election? I can't believe
not
it.
Another one.
Yes, so we've had obviously Lib Dems as well this week. I must say the Labour one, just to go back to that quickly.
Yeah, of course.
Was jam-packed, full of stuff, wasn't it? And some of the things that Simon didn't even mention there, that that's also massive, so nationalisation, obviously massive part of it, scrapping tuition fees, we're all going to get free broadband, scrapping universal credit. I mean, it's going to be one hell of a ride if Labour do get into power.
It's easy to write it in a manifesto.
It is.
To implement it, perhaps.
Exactly, and that's why I take a lot of this with a pinch of salt all the time. I read this manifesto.
Well, should we move on then?
Let's move on. Yeah, let's move on, Nate. Lib Dems, I think the first thing to point out is obviously the number one manifesto pledge is to stop Brexit. That is pretty much nailed on number one thing. They are the party that are billing themselves that you should vote for if you want to stop Brexit. But some of the things that I had a look through their manifesto that I thought were quite interesting, they've gone on a green pledge, which kind of cuts into what the Green Party obviously all about. They're talking about the majority of our electricity coming from renewable sources, which I think is something that's kind of happening slowly but surely anyway. A frequent flyer tax, so that's something that Mr. Lambert's written about in the past. Free childcare. Childcare is a massive issue at the moment. You know, it's becoming quite a crisis. It's so expensive, as I've recently found out, to put your child into childcare. And they're talking about how this will work, I'm not sure, but basically free childcare. And the one that really hit home, one that would actually make me semi-tempted, but not really, potentially to vote for Lib Dems, freezing train fares. Come on, that is the one. That's the one I want, Georgie. That's people speaking to me personally.
Yeah.
As someone that is seeing not just train fares going up consistently, but the way that they're calculated that these prices can go up means that the compounding inflation that I'm suffering each year continues to get worse and potentially eats into any kind of wage rise that I might get. And I think it's one of those problems that all the parties should be looking at.
So it's a joke. I hate the train fare.
I think if we go into any more detail, we're going to spoiler it. All
right,
the next episode, Georgie. I think we should go real deep diving into these manifestos next week, which would be really quite exciting.
Yep. If you're happy to do that. Did we get anything from the Tories, sort of like dribbled anything out that is likely to be in it? Or
They're going to raise the national insurance threshold, which will basically the lower rate which you pay national insurance, which is lower than the lower income tax rate. And that would put money in people's pockets, although the amount of money that it would put in people's pockets, there seems to be some debate over, as in the Prime Minister may have said something that wasn't completely accurate. But I don't think anybody really thinks that anything he says is completely accurate, do they? That laugh that was given this week when they were asked if you could trust politicians, honestly.
On that happy note, Simon, we're going to shift on, but I do expect that we will hear a lot more about the NHS. We're already hearing quite a bit about it in the run-up to the election. But we're hearing the latest warning of a winter crisis in the health service. We do read reports about this every year, but this time it's related to pensions. Now, as a temporary fix, the NHS is to foot pensions tax bills run up by doctors in order to stop them refusing shifts to avoid shock penalties. But critics reckon this could threaten patient care by causing longer waiting lists and delays to operations. So, Lee, what's this about?
Georgie, this is so complicated, it is unbelievable. What happened? There was something called the taper that was introduced by former Chancellor George Osborne from 2016-2017, and it's putting a lot of doctors, especially, there's other professions that this hits as well, but people that work in the NHS are getting hit by unexpected tax bills by basically working overtime, doing shifts that perhaps is outside of their normal pay. And it has had a consequence for them in which they are getting hit with these tax bills. I mean, we've had reports of people having to remortgage their homes in order to pay for these tax bills. And it's just putting more pressure on NHS workers. We're talking about people here that are earning more than £110,000 a year, because this is when tax charges can kick in for doctors, high earning doctors. And basically, they're turning around and saying, why am I going to be doing any overtime shifts if I'm going to get hit by this tax bill? So it's created a real headache for people. The Pensions Minister, Steve Webb, has said how bizarre that this is, that the government have basically come out and said, we're going to make this move for these doctors for just a year, for the next year. But what about people in other professions? Are they having unfair treatment? Are doctors having this unfair treatment? You can see why it's done, that it's been done, especially given the run-up to the election, especially given the fact that every year in the winter we have what, you know, the press would describe as a staffing crisis at the NHS, where waiting times go up, where more people are heavily relying on the NHS because of, you know, dipping weather, temperature and that type of thing. So it's kind of a temporary fix. It feels a lot like kicking the can down the road type behaviour. And it comes actually after the kind of government said there wasn't really a problem and there's nothing that needs to be done with it. But this proves otherwise.
Simon, what do you make of it? How serious could this be?
This is spectacularly dumb that we are in this position. The taper is a spectacularly dumb policy. It was put in place because there are concerns that high earners are getting too much benefit from pension tax relief and they're putting too much into their pension. It's to try and limit the amount that higher earners can put into their pension, which is the product of muddled thinking, to my mind, okay? There are already limits. The limit is you can have a pension pot of up to £1 million, just over £1 million, and you can put in up to £40,000 a year. That's much, much, much less than previous generations could pay into their pension. And rather than just deciding, okay, that's fine, we've put these limits in place, people can no longer shovel unlimited amounts of money into their pension, we decided to introduce this daft taper thing as well. It has been pointed out for absolutely ages that this was going to cause problems. Anybody who's dealt with it has had an absolute tax nightmare, and it is contributing to a crisis in the NHS that has been cooked up from a combination of a complete failure to plan and think ahead by successive governments to put enough money into the health service whilst considering it to be a sacred cow, and then exacerbated by the people that you are relying on to be working in that health service are then having to turn down shifts because they're getting a tax bill from a daft pensions policy you put in place. Now, the Tory party has to accept responsibility for this because it's one of its policies, and it's continued with it over the years. They could have just stopped this. They could have axed the taper at any time. But I think the other parties have to take a responsibility here as well, because the reason why this was put in place was because there's so much fear of being seen to be favouring rich people that you start introducing insane parts of the tax code that backfire on you and have unintended consequences. We don't have enough people in the NHS because we're not training enough people. We've got a shortage of nurses. We've got a shortage of doctors. This same government, at the same time as not training enough nurses and doctors, managed to go to war with junior doctors a few years later and politicise possibly the least political bunch of people I've ever met in my life, at the same time as taxing older doctors out of doing more work. And it's just, and it goes back years and years and years before this, because the hospitals don't have any money because some other stupid government before them signed them all up to ridiculously expensive PFI deals. It's basically one of those things that is symptomatic of a country that knows the price of everything, the value of nothing, and totally fails to think ahead. And if anybody had any sense, they'd just scrap this stupid taper thing.
So that's the solution. I know all about this because my mum was a doctor. And it just became, it just wasn't worth it. Anyway, so trouble there. Trouble also, Simon, in the rental sector as well on This Is Money. We've got warnings that more landlords plan to leave the market as costs rise, profits fall, and official figures are showing a spike in buy-to-let repossessions. Now, they're up 40% on last year, while the number of those in arrears of between 7.5% and 10% grew by 9%. The others, so below 7.5%, I actually think it's getting better, but you can explain that in a second. But what is going on? Who is saying this? And what impact will it have? Actually, Lee, I'm going to come to you, if that's all right. Who's saying this? What's going on? Things to be concerned about?
Well, it is something to be concerned about, Georgie. Landlords have been massively squeezed in recent years. It's, again, another government policy in which it seems to be sort of making sure it's been seen not favouring people that are basically stockpiling houses and letting them out. And we, again, we get these bad stories about, you know, rogue landlords that are not acting in their tenants' best interest, but the large majority of landlords are very good and provide rental homes for people that, you know, they're vital, in my opinion. So what's happened is this is some UK finance data that has shown a 40% rise in the number of repossessed buy-to-let properties compared to last year. 800 landlords had a property repossessed in the third quarter of 2019. There's a survey that suggests a third of landlords plan to sell at least one property over the next 12 months. It's suggesting that a number are looking to exit. And one of the big reasons for this has been increasing costs of things like mortgage tax relief. And basically, as the years have gone on, it's become less attractive to become a landlord. So we've got that. Now, what actually UK Finance are telling us is that there's been a backlog. Basically, there was a change in the way lenders were calculating how much a borrower owes. They're saying that there was a backlog of these sort of cases that are now being cleared up. So there's been this spike. That's what's behind this spike. But David Smith, who's from the Residential Landlords Association, is saying that repossessions for mortgage arrears take place for a number of reasons, mortgage interest relief being one of them, and increasing cost of regulation. And also he's pinpointed it down to the increase in time it takes to repossess a property in the first instance, and evicting tenants is another thing. It could be quite hard to evict a tenant, a problem tenant, if you get into a dispute with them and it goes through court and all that type of thing. It's making becoming a landlord, in my opinion, a very unattractive option for many. Will these trends continue? Well, it'd be interesting to see what happens in the quarters coming up, because there's only so much that UK Finance can say is a backlog. And is it actually more people struggling to keep up with their mortgage payments on rental on properties that they own, that they rent out?
You have a lot of sympathy, don't you, for the landlords?
I wouldn't say it's not sympathy, Georgia. I've been in my fair share of rental properties, and I would just say on the whole, landlords that I've had have been, you know, pretty good. You know, they serve a purpose. You could argue, especially in London and the South East, where it's such a strong rental market, somewhere in London, we've seen house prices, property prices completely snowball out of control. Have landlords been part of that problem? Well, yeah, I would argue that they have. But at the same time, landlords do serve a purpose for people to have places to live. We could argue until the cows come home about how expensive rents are. They can only, you know, be priced at what the market is at. So I have sympathy for both landlords and tenants. Tenants that want to get on the property market that are paying sky-high rents and find it difficult to save for a deposit. But I can't join a brigade of people just, you know, completely piling into landlords and saying they're an evil.
Yeah, well, I ask that not to be accusatory, but only for the fact I was following a thread last night which was basically just slamming landlords about who hadn't given people's deposits. And I'm a famous renter. I've been through all sorts, Lee. I've got a marvellous one now, but I've had, you know, one who didn't give me back the deposit because the taps were a bit wonky or something, or had become unscrewed. I was only there for 4 months, so that sort of indicates that perhaps they were not of the best quality.
But Georgie, was that the same 4 months where you were training to be a plumber and you were practising on all the things around the flat?
That might have been that time. Alas, no, because my plumbing skills are somewhat limited. But yeah, there is a sort of growing narrative around, you know, landlords are bad, and that, I suppose, in the run-up to an election, and we do get quite a lot of politicisation, I suppose, suppose, of this. And fair enough. It is, as everything that Lee just pointed out there, very expensive to rent. You can't save for a flat, etc., etc. But we must remember that we want landlords, we want good landlords, because people want somewhere to rent.
True. And broadly speaking, you would ideally like your landlord to be doing okay financially rather than badly and struggling with arrears and repossession, because the chances of you getting anything improved in the property that you're renting are greatly increased by the landlord being comfortable rather than thinking that they're about to go bust. I do think that the landlords have to take a responsibility here and a look at themselves, and are they spending money on their homes in a way that they would... Are they spending money on the homes that they are renting out in the way that they would spend money on their own homes? Are they keeping them to the same standard? Are they genuinely doing the things that need to be done when they need to be done? Is it because of a reasonable delay? People can be unrealistic, and you know, as a homeowner, my boiler packs up, I've got to get a plumber out. Mm-hmm. Now, to be honest, you want to try and get a plumber out at the moment. Weather's just got cold. If your boiler's packed up, you could be looking at maybe 3 or 4 days. Last time we had a problem with our boiler, we know a plumber. He's like, I'm really sorry, I can't get to you within, you know, 3 or 4 days.
So
as a tenant, you do have to understand that if as a homeowner, you can't get a plumber for 3 or 4 days, you do have to understand that potentially your landlord might not be able to get a plumber for 3 or 4 days. But there are lots of scenarios where landlords take advantage of people. I think that agents have a lot of responsibility here. There's a lot of letting agents who are very, very good and look after people. My mum is a letting agent. I've watched her run her own business for the past 30 years. She makes sure that her landlords look after their tenants, and she points out to them that is financially to their benefit, because if you want to make money as a landlord, the best thing to have is happy tenants who don't move out, so that you don't lose money in void periods. And that means fixing stuff when it needs to be fixed and doing things and not ripping them off and all those other things. But there's a lot of Wild West scenarios going on in the letting agent world, to the point where they've been banned from charging people fees because a small minority of them had been ripping people off to such an extent. These repossessions are coming from a low level. It's worth pointing out, this 40%. But it's a sign of the times of landlords being squeezed. And yeah, maybe it'd be better if we had less private landlords, but we don't have really many local authority or social landlords anymore. We're not building any more council houses to really any extent, and to be honest, we need them, and we are where we are. So as I said, you're probably better off if they've got a little bit of money in their pocket. Not too much, obviously. You don't want to be paying so much rent that they rock up in their roller and start chucking 50s around the place. But you know,
yeah,
I mean, because they probably pick the 50s up and leave with them. If they rocked up in their roller, walked into your flat and chucked 50s around the place and left them for you, you'd probably think that was okay.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Lee, if you are, though, a tenant in the situation where a property's being repossessed, what do you do? Can you do anything?
Not really, Georgie, because at the end of the day, the landlord's at the mercy of the lender. And, you know, as I pointed out there, though, it's hard to have tenants evicted. It's become harder. There's been more rules brought into place. But when it comes to once a lender seizes a property, you know, you can imagine that the goalposts change somewhat, and they want that property in their possession as quickly as possible. And I bet things get moving pretty quickly, I can imagine. I think that you'd like to think that landlords would be quite open and honest and be, you know, forthcoming in saying, look, you know, you got a notice period. It's unfortunate, but basically the house is being repossessed, so you've got to go. But to be honest, there's not an awful lot you can do.
No. All right, we're going to stick with the home theme and house prices, falling house prices, in fact, having an impact on inheritance tax. Now, the number of claimants who received refunds because of falling prices has doubled in 2 years, and thousands more could be due a rebate this year. More than 4,500 were able to reclaim tax that they'd paid on their property after selling it at a lower price than it was valued at when they inherited it. And not since the financial crisis have rebates run at these levels. Simon, what's going on? Who said this?
Interesting, isn't it? Well, what happened was there was a Freedom of Information request that was done to find out about this and about how many people were getting inheritance tax back. It was done by financial advisors NFU Mutual. And what this coincides with is a slump in the market in London and the South East. And the way the probate system works is that you have to gather up all the information about how much a person was worth, fill in all the forms, apply for probate. You do you get a valuation, market valuation, on the day of death of the property. And then once you've got a grant of probate, then you can start dishing out the money to the people who have inherited, and you can sell the property. But the scenario is that some of these properties are being valued, and then they're going on the market, and it's being discovered that they can't sell for anywhere near that. There's not many buyers around, people are negotiating big discounts and so on. And so people are actually getting inheritance tax back that estates have paid. So it's worth noting that if you are someone in this situation and you do find out that you've sold the property for less than it's valued at, think about seeing as to whether you can get some of that tax back, because it could be worth quite a bit of money.
And it's not just house prices, homes, is it?
No, you can potentially do it on shares and investments. It's a little bit harder with this, and it's a little bit less obvious, but you can do it with shares and investments. And if you do find yourself in this position, then email us and we'll see if we can get an expert to help you out. editor@thisismoney.co.uk.
Excellent, do indeed. And finally, last week we spoke about the National Lottery being 25. Well, it is not, as many of you will know. There's some catchy adverts for annoying postcode lotteries and all that sort of thing. It's not the only draw in town, but we also have another one where you drive for where you drive, called the Reg Plate Lotto. The Reg Plate, or the registration plate, because the Reg is the Reg Plate Lotto. All right, fair enough. It's free to enter, monthly draw, and you could win a lifetime supply of petrol or diesel. So, what's going on?
I'll start from the beginning with this, Georgie. It's not actually a prize to win a lifetime fuel. No. It's just basically how they've calculated the prize, and they're saying it would cover 70 quid worth of fuel every week for 73 years. That's how they build it, because what you do is you can, if you're a car owner, if you're a registered keeper of a vehicle, you can put your registration plate into this lottery to be part of the draw to win this £265,000 prize. They've just hooked the story on it being 70 years worth of fuel, because a lot of people pointed out and said, well, hold on a minute, what if I've got an electric car? Which, of course, you could spend it on your electricity if you so wish. It's entirely up to you. But it's a pretty simple one, this, really. Obviously, there's been quite a few sort of lotteries that have come out that are free to play over the years. And basically, this one is something a little bit different, as in you put in your number plate. There's going to be three draws, one this month, one next month, the one the month afterwards. And basically, you can win that sum of cash. Now, it's worth pointing out here, as anything on the internet, when you go, oh, how is it free?
Yeah.
How
right?
is it free? What exactly. am I giving up? Well, you're giving up your personal information, aren't you, really?
Oh,
you
right
know,
then,
and you know, and it's sign your email address. And Rob, our motoring editor, he signed up for this and did receive an email saying, we're going to tailor your emails, you know, what we send you. So it's run by petrolprices.com. Which compares fuel costs, you know, around the country. And it's a company that This Is Money have used for the best part of a decade to get an accurate picture of unleaded prices and diesel prices.
It's a legitimate company.
Yeah, it's a company we've heard of.
The DVLA that sell your details for $2.50.
Well, yeah, I'm surprised they haven't cottoned on and started doing a lottery based on your registration plate. But I mean, as anything, again, with this type of thing, if you are tempted, have a look at it, but make sure you read the terms and conditions, make sure you know. And this applies to all lottos and anything that you do on the internet. Just don't just simply click accept T's and C's. Have a look, see what they're actually doing with your data. And don't moan if they start sending you, spamming you with emails. Of course, you can always opt out of that type of thing. We've got stronger regulations, things like GDPR now. But, you know, we'll report back in a couple of weeks, Georgie, when there's been the first draw. Find out who the lucky winner is.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic.
Yeah.
Look forward to it. Simon, your views?
Giving away a lot of money, aren't they? Over the 3 months, they're going to give away a total amount of £796,160.
Yeah.
That is a lot of money.
It's not catchy, is it?
That's an expensive promotion. That is a very expensive promotion for them. Obviously, they're doing it to try and get a load of customers. It worked out on a customer acquisition cost, as they say in the business, a CPA. But yeah, I mean, that's a lot of money. And that is not a price to be sniffed at, is it? And it does sound better that you'd get it in the way that Lee described it than that you would basically have some kind of charge card where you went and filled up every time you got your petrol free. You just had to keep, every time you filled your car up, you had to keep the receipt and then send it off and you'd get reimbursed. Someone came round with a petrol tanker and parked it outside your house and said, here you go, mate, this is your problem. That should see you through to the end of your life. That is a sort of a John Maynard Keynes investing and getting all that grain delivered to the university type story. But I don't know. They've said the odds of winning are pretty steep, of 55 million to one. But, I mean, are that many people going to enter it? Or have they just made the odds? Have they just worked out a way of making the odds that steep? I mean, the question will be, will three people actually win this sum of money? Because if lots of people don't enter, then the odds would be much shorter. Exactly. If something is legit and it's a legit organisation, which petrolprices.com is, then it is worth entering a prize draw every so often, because I think people overestimate how difficult it would be to win prizes in prize draws. As someone who has been involved in a few prize-type scenarios in the past, you'd be surprised. It's really difficult to get lots and lots and lots and lots of people to sign up to something, even if you offer a really good prize. So when you see those attractive prizes, maybe sometimes they are worth signing up for, because the odds might be shorter than you think.
No, after our episode last week talking about the National Lottery, I still never actually played where you have to sort of like scratch the numbers and...
A scratch card?
No. The write the numbers in. Whatever the one.
Choose your own numbers.
That's the one. Whatever.
Not a lucky dip.
Yeah. I know, Simon, you should see his face right now.
Pick your numbers.
I did a scratch card and I won...
£2.
Four.
How much did you pay for the scratch
card? More than that.
Oh, no.
But, you know, it's worth having a go.
If only you'd invested that money instead, George, over stocks and shares I've seen in the last 20 years.
Where
imagine
be.
You'd be a millionaire.
We do a similar thing for the big Euro Millions draws. Richard Browning runs an investment syndicate where he collects the money off everyone and we buy lots of Euro Millions tickets. And then we generally tend to win one or two prizes, which is about half of what we put in or a quarter of what we put in the first place. And then we just keep playing until we've got no money left.
Just trickles along for a couple of weeks. Mm. Yeah, and we get that winner email of Rich to say, we've won. And then you open it and it'll say, we've won £2.60. Yeah.
It's the taking part, though.
You've got to play, because what if everybody else that you worked with won and you didn't?
That is always the fear of a lottery syndicate, isn't it?
On that note, you can keep up to date with all the latest breaking money news. Just go to thisismoney.co.uk or download the app where you are always a winner. If you have any comments or questions for the team or anything that you would like them to look into, Simon?
If you've got a problem and you want us to look into it, email us at editor@thisismoney.co.uk. If you would like to tweet us at This Is Money, or come to thisismoney.co.uk/podcast to find all the podcast articles past and join in the debate in the reader comments.
Thank you very much. And if you like our podcast, please do rate and review us on iTunes. It helps people find us.